Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine conflict. The war in Ukraine at this point looks to be a global conversation. We have the news of Kim Jong-un, the dictator of North Korea, in conversation not only with the defense minister of Russia, Shoigu, who visits, but also now proposing to meet with Vladimir Putin, perhaps in Vladivostok in these next weeks or months. We join this North Korean presence in the war in some fashion, perhaps to sell weapons, perhaps in some fashion to provide work crews. We can only guess. With the news we've had for some time of Iran in the war in terms of drones and perhaps missiles soon enough, once the UN sanctions are lifted on Iranian missile factories. Belarus has always participated in permitting soldiers to deploy. I mention all this because there's another escalation going on, and that has to do with drones. And I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, who's been my guide on this conflict from the beginning, from before the beginning, from years past, because we're looking at something that is escalating before us very slowly. Anatole, a very good day to you. It was in preparing for my conversation with you, it occurred to me that there's a pattern here that you can see when you look for it. The drones. We have a report from London of the Russian drone attack on a Danube port, fragments of the drone found in Romanian sovereignty on the other side of the river. We also have a drone attack on Bessarabia, which has not been heretofore part of the conflict. This is southern Ukraine. We also have a report of Russian nuclear-capable bombers being disguised crudely in some fashion with tires, rubber tires put on their wings to make them look to be a smaller profile for fear of drone attacks by Ukraine or its agents. And then we have a drone attack launched inside Russia, goes the claim, at Pskov in the north, well out of the battle zone. I add to this the half-confirmed report that there was a drone shutdown in the area of the residence of Vladimir Putin. What do you make of this? I don't know what the proper metaphor is. All of a sudden, drones are fanning out very far away from the conflict at the battlefield. Is this something that is fresh? Is this something that was always inevitable, an escalation because of the frustration on the battlefront? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Yes, I think it was inevitable if the war continued. In every war, people become more ruthless, more desperate. They try to damage the enemy in every way they can. Russia has, of course, been doing that to Ukraine since the war began in an effort to destroy Ukrainian infrastructure and distract Ukrainian anti-aircraft forces. And now the Ukrainians are trying to do the same inside Russia with their drone attacks. Now, some of these have a real effect on Russian military capacity, if only a small one, like the destruction of the Russian bombers. But as far as the wider attacks are concerned, I mean, as you remember, I was in a position in a hospital bed to observe the Russian attacks on Zaporizhia in southern Ukraine when I was there in March. And I have to say, both in terms of damage to infrastructure and in terms of damage to civilian morale, they were very ineffective. In fact, in terms of civilian morale, they had a precisely opposite effect. They infuriated the local population and made them more determined to resist. If the Ukrainians think that they are going to demoralize the Russian population by these pinprick attacks, I fear that they haven't learned anything from their own experience or from, of course, the experience of the Second World War, where, as we know, attacks on a vastly larger scale, in fact, strengthened resistance first in Britain and then in Germany and did not damage it. But I fear we're going to see more and more of this on both sides.
The drones in Russia, we don't know where they come from. We don't know who's operating them. There have been many headlines. I remember from the first drone said to have appeared over the Kremlin. There was even speculation at the time that it was a false flag operation. Now we see that whatever is launching these drones is very capable anywhere in Russia. And there's this suggestion here of political assassination or military assassination, commonly called decapitation. Do you sense that that is a guardrail that we have in front of us that we may not follow? The fact that the political leaders who are moving around on the map for the last year and a half, I think of Zelensky traveling everywhere, are at risk of drone assassination?
Well, I mean, yes, if you look at the history of America, assassinating terrorist leaders or alleged terrorist leaders over the past two decades, that is an obvious threat. I mean, the question is, of course, whether either side has sufficiently good intelligence and technology to do that in the way that America did it. But I think, yes, I mean, that is a very serious potential area of escalation, because undoubtedly, if God forbid, the Russians killed Zelensky or the Ukrainians managed to kill a Russian leader, as of course they've already killed a very large number of Russian generals. Well, in the case of the generals, the Russians did that with the help of US intelligence. Undoubtedly, if a senior Russian in Moscow were killed, Russia would automatically blame it on US intelligence, satellite intelligence in particular. And you know, a possibility that has been raised ever since the importance of U.S. satellite technology to the Ukrainians has become clear is that the Russians would escalate drastically by attacking and knocking out American satellites. Now, that would take the war to a completely new level. Another risk is that the attack on Pskov was very, very far from Ukraine. Now, it may have been a long-range Ukrainian drone. It may have been Ukrainian operatives or Russian sympathizers within Russia. We don't know. But certainly there are suspicions in Russia that it could have been launched from neighboring Latvia. Now, that, of course, is hideously dangerous because that would create something that actually has not existed yet, despite Western propaganda, which is a direct Russian military threat to the Baltic states. And the Baltic states are, of course, members of NATO.
I'm going to stop writing chapter one of a Tom Clancy thriller about how this war can go and turn to threats that are being issued right now. This is the London Telegraph, not my particularly cherry-picking. It's just this morning in the U.S. Russia's FSB detains smugglers sending military aircraft parts to Ukraine. Or Kremlin warns of consequences. That's a quote over depleted uranium shells now said to be en route to Ukraine from the U.S. stores. Or Russia claims it killed claims it liquidated two Ukrainian saboteurs. So it is not just drones. It is not just men and women staying at some remove on the battlefield or in sabotage. It's very personal. It's something associated with 100 years ago and the actions of enemy agents. What is driving this in my measure? And I'm just an armchair reader of this war. You've been there. You've seen it. What is driving this is the frustration on the battlefield. And I turn immediately to that, because we keep getting these positive headlines here in the U.S. that things are going better. After we got the headlines that things were going poorly and that there was much unhappiness at the Pentagon and the Ministry of Defense in London for the slow pace or the sluggishness. There were many metaphors used of the counteroffensive. Now we get the opposite, that the Russians are deploying soldiers in order to stop the advance of the Ukrainians, or that the Ukrainian latest news is that the Russians are retreating along the Zaporizhia Oblast route to the Sea of Azov. I understand it's fog of war, but this begins to resemble, to me again, the first war, when there was frustration in the battlefield. You know this as an Englishman. You know it better than I do. We had Churchill's idea of what about Gallipoli. Is there a sense of that you get from the fact that the frustration on the battlefield or the stalemate on the battlefield is driving this escalatory language?
Yeah, yes, I think that's quite right. I mean, and there are beginning to be real, you know, echoes of the First World War. You know, I've read a good deal of the history, and one remembers, or has read, how governments on both sides, of course, would blow up the capture of one village, which by then, of course, had been reduced to not just a heap of rubble, but you know, just pulverized into mud and dust, and would portray that as a tremendous victory. And it really doesn't look like that, you know, more than 100 years on, especially, of course, given the enormous casualties involved. And now you're beginning to get Western military experts, including a retired British general, General Richard Barons, in the Financial Times, who are very, very supportive of Ukraine. But now they are talking all the time about attrition. Barons says, yes, we must stay the course and go on supporting the Ukrainians, and then they will have a real chance of winning in 2025. Well, I mean, the problem about that is, of course, that attrition cuts both ways. The British in 1916 shifted after the catastrophe of the Somme to a strategy of attrition. And the result was that they had worn themselves down so much by 1918 that if America hadn't come in to save them, the Germans would probably have won. And, you know, Russia too, of course, has become bogged down in these, you know, in this endless trench warfare, which stopped the Russians in the east, just as the Ukrainians are now being stopped in the south, it seems. But who will come out on top in a war of attrition lasting years? We just don't know. It's rather interesting that both sides have gone to the Korean Peninsula to try to build themselves up for that. A few months ago, America managed to get South Korea to provide 500,000 artillery shells to America so that America could pass on the equivalent to Ukraine. Now it looks as if the Russians are going to do a deal whereby they get perhaps 1 million artillery shells from North Korea. And so it will go.
Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We're going to turn to the European war from the point of view of the economies to repeat a wonderful cell line from the Game of Thrones. Winter is coming. I'm John Batchelor.